Right. Now, I want to start by saying that this evening is hard. Perhaps the message tonight may be a difficult message to... a difficult message to wrestle with in the light of suffering. Because suffering exists, doesn't it? You don't have to look very hard into the world that we live in to see that we live in a pretty broken world. And on an evening like today, when we come together to acknowledge, to pray, to think about those in our lives who have been touched by cancer, we're reminded all the more of how broken this world is. And so I guess in some sense there was a bit of hesitation and anxiety in preparing a message for tonight. Because how do we do suffering justice? How do we do suffering well in light of being a Christian? I don't think it's easy. I don't think there's one easy answer. But I do know there's hope. I do know there's a story of hope that speaks into suffering, speaks into illnesses and sicknesses. So my prayer that this message and this time would fill you with hope, comfort, endurance, as we together ponder and reflect and remember those in our lives and within our community who have been touched by cancer. But I want to share a story with you tonight. So this story begins with a couple, faithful in their conviction, faithful in their love for God, yet they face the struggle of childlessness. This is a particularly saddening and demoralizing reality for this family, for this couple. See, this couple has been made some pretty serious promises by God, which in the light of their reality seem so far-fetched, so impossible, so unlikely. It's hard to trust in the face of reality. Yet, in the midst of this uncertainty, in the midst of insecurity and improbability, God comes through. God is proved to be faithful. The couple are blessed with a son. God's promises are upheld. Now this son gets older, but the father's been asked to do the most unthinkable thing, the most impossible thing, to sacrifice his only son. But this man is of a conviction where he believes his faith is of paramount importance. He doesn't back down. He's willing to take his son to the altar to sacrifice him. But God steps in. God steps in and provides a lamb. The promises are upheld. The family grows, offspring abound, and God's promises are being upheld. However, things take a turn for the worst when one of the family's offspring ends up in a foreign land, not of his own choosing, but because he was abandoned by his siblings, removed from the protection of his family. He is taken into the service of an overseer. He proves himself rather adept at managing the affairs of his master, and so he's given much responsibility. Though, sadly, this does not last. And through circumstances that are outside of his control, this young man is imprisoned, condemned falsely for things he had not done. But God wasn't silent. God wasn't willing to give up on his promise all the way back to the childless couple. This young man, as circumstances would prove, was being led and upheld by God, coming before the leader of this foreign nation to interpret visions and dreams. Now this foreign leader was astounded by his wisdom. He could see this man was wise. He could see this man was following something bigger. And once again, he was elevated to a position of authority, given a position of highest authority over the entire land. Now, the young man had interpreted the dream correctly, and a famine roars across the land, which coincidentally leads his family to him, unaware that this is their brother, their child. His siblings come before him to plead for help, for food and for support. The young man gives them an offer. It sounds tough. It sounds harsh. But the siblings return to their father and they report what this young man had said. Eventually, they return with their father, unaware that this is their brother, their child, when he reveals himself. There is much joy. There is jubilation. There is excitement. The family has been redeemed. They have been given a place of shelter, a place of importance in the foreign land. God's promises are upheld. Years pass and this family has grown largely, a hundredfold, spanning much of this foreign land. Though this family is no longer held in such high regard, they are no longer given the place of prominence they once had. They are crushed and whipped under the heel and lash of slavery. Yet God is faithful to his promises. He hears the cries of his people and he has a plan. An unlikely leader is called out from the people. This man claims that he's too unwise, too foolish with words, not the right fit. But God says that he will be with him and he won't abandon him. This man goes to the nation's leader, a man who is fierce, ruthless, unwavering. Even in the face of 9 calamities that befall him and his people, he refuses to relent. Except on the 10th, he sees the power of this God. He finally relents and he allows the family to leave, which now numbering 1,000 follow this one leader into the wilderness. God's promises are upheld. Years continue to pass and the family, now numbering hundreds of thousands, are in a new land, a land that was to be theirs, a land they were promised. It was a good land, a fertile land, a land that brought hope, brought promise, brought anticipation and excitement. They rejoice in their God, for they've seen his promises are trustworthy and faithful. But sadly, this land is also tempting. A land full of tastes, sights, and sounds that arouse their desire away from God. They begin to forget the faithfulness of their God. They yearn to be like the other nations, to look like the other nations. If only they had a king. Despite being rejected, God gives them what they want. They finally look like the other nations. They finally look like everyone else. They have their king. The king to govern them, to lead them, to go before them in battle. Sadly, they had forgotten that that was God. They were unable to conceive that God was their governor, their leader, the one that went before them in battle. Now, sadly, their unfaithfulness grows larger. The leaders of the family grow more callous and independent from God. They fail to acknowledge what their ancestors had so faithfully trusted in. The family is split. Brother is pitted against brother, divided over distrust, envy, thirst for power and prominence. God is saddened by this disunity. He's hurt by their unfaithfulness. He's angered by their stubborn hearts. Even in their division, the family continues to stand against the God who had been so faithful to them. Yet, God's promises are upheld. God sends messengers to the family, to both sides, to call them back to trusting in their God, to call them to remember the God that had brought them out of the foreign land and into the land they now loved, the land of hope, of peace, of promise. Now, much of what is said by these messages proclaims a coming punishment for the family's continued unfaithfulness. But even in the midst of such a proclamation, there is hope. Hope that their God would remain faithful, that their God would remain by their side, that their God would still love them despite the discipline that was to come. In the face of uncertainty, insecurity, and impending punishment, one of the messengers proclaims these words: "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand." Now, I hope you picked up on that story, because that's the story of the Old Testament. Do you notice we began with Abraham and Sarah? Promised children, but childless, struggling to acknowledge and trust the promises that were given to them. But God comes through. God's faithful. They're blessed with a son. Then Abraham's asked for the unthinkable, to sacrifice his son. God wants to prove his faithfulness, and he does. Abraham is faithful. And God provides a lamb in his son's place. Then we looked at Joseph. Joseph, who had been abandoned by his brothers, sold into slavery, ends up under Potiphar, who's a governor of the land. Potiphar sees that this dude's wise. He uses him. He allows him authority over his affairs. But his wife also takes notice. And sadly, Joseph is condemned for something he had not committed. He's thrown in prison. But God is still faithful. God hears him. Even in the midst of two people forgetting his very existence, he comes before Pharaoh, interprets dreams. Pharaoh likes what he hears. He sees the wisdom. He gives Joseph a place of absolute authority over the land of Egypt. That's big. Joseph's family end up coming to Egypt because of the famine. They don't know it's Joseph. But as the story tells us, they eventually realize Joseph reveals himself, and they're redeemed. They're redeemed from a place where they would have died, where the promises would have just ended. But God's promises are upheld. And we looked at Moses and his story in calling the people out of Egypt, coming to a Pharaoh who was unwavering, relentless, ruthless. Moses led his people out of Egypt into the wilderness. And then we looked at Israel's life in the Promised Land, which started off so good, started off pretty well, until they wanted their own king. And then it started off kind of good, and then it just went downhill, because they were tempted time and time again to be unfaithful. The whole story, realistically, of the Old Testament is a story of one nation's unfaithfulness and God's faithfulness in spite of that. Now you might be thinking, what on earth does this have to do with Touched by Cancer? What does the story of the Old Testament have to do with reflecting, lamenting, grieving and remembering those who have been touched by cancer? Now, I hope you picked up on it, but I repeated a sentence throughout that story. God's promises are upheld. If you take nothing else from this message but that truth into when you fight against illnesses, when you suffer, when you journey with people in illnesses, that'll be enough to get you through. Because in the Old Testament, God never abandons his people, even when they abandon him. Even when they throw his leadership in his face, he doesn't abandon them. Even when they are unfaithful and follow other gods, he doesn't abandon them. He is the ever-loving Father waiting with open arms to bring us home. So what does this mean for you in the midst of hardship? What does this mean for you in the midst of suffering or difficulty? God will not abandon you. God has not deserted you. God hears you and knows you and knows what you are working through and struggling through. God knows the family members who are fighting a battle that looks hard. God is alongside you when you are dealing with hearing the news for the first time. God is with you when you have to say goodbye. God never abandons you. The extent that God goes to not abandon us is he sends his own son for you. Do you know that? God did not abandon you. He abandoned his own son on the cross. Jesus said, "Father, Father, why have you forsaken me?" For you. For your family members. For your loved ones. For those who are fighting illnesses that they don't think they can win. God is always with you. God will not abandon you. God will not desert you. Psalm 46 says these pretty powerful words. Feel free to open your Bibles to them if you want, because I don't know if I can get through reading this. But it says, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear,
though the earth gives way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. God will help her at the break of day. Sorry, God is within her and she will not fall. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. And he says, be still. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Boy, they're powerful words, aren't they? God is an ever-present help for you in trouble. Always. Regardless of what you are going through. Regardless of whether you feel you can fight another day, God is an ever-present help. He is always there. God is within us. We will not fall. We may struggle. We may tremble. We may falter. But we will not fall. God will help us at the beginning of every day. God is our fortress. He makes wars cease, breaks the bow and shatters the spear, burns the shield. And he calls us to stop, to rest, to be still. Now, I don't know if you look at the world around you and you feel that God is doing this, that you can acknowledge that wars are ceasing, that he is breaking the bow and shattering the spear. Suffering has a way of making us look at just suffering, doesn't it? But if you can just pull your gaze out, if you can pull your gaze out and acknowledge that God is bigger, God is greater, God is more powerful than whatever it is the circumstance you're dealing with or the illness you are facing, you can read the words of Isaiah 41:10 with hope when he says, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. Now, I don't know if you're like me and need some time to reflect. I hope you are. So I want to give you the time to stop, to be still, to reflect, to pray. If you've got one of these little cards, feel free to write on it. But I want to encourage you to meditate on the words of Isaiah 41:10. Or meditate on Psalm 46 and take hope and take courage. And so I'll give you some time to do that. We'll have a song just played in the background while we do that. And then I'll close in prayer after we have some time to do that. So if you would like to light a candle, I'll also light the candles on the side. So feel free to do that. But I invite you to come and reflect.